It is so good to have everyone with us here this evening, and thank you for all those that are live streaming. I was just checking our website, and we right now have 133 cities around the world from six different countries live streaming with us right now. Tonight, we have a guest speaker, Avi Lipkin. Let's give him a big hand. How many here have heard Avi Lipkin speak before? Okay, how many here have never heard Avi Lipkin speak? Okay, Avi, take a look here. Here's all the hands. The vast majority have not heard you ever speak before. Let me find out, how many of you, is this your first time coming here to this facility? All right, we got a lot of visitors here. We welcome you. I'm so excited to have Avi Lipkin here. Avi, if you would come on up, let's give him a big hand. He's got his own mic here, but let's stand and let's open with a word of prayer. Avinu Malkeinu, our Father, our King, we just thank you so much for this time that we can come together, all united, Jews and Gentiles, and just learn of you and learn, be more cognizant of what's going on in the world today and how it can affect our lives. And we just pray right now that you would give us eyes to see, ears to hear, hearts to understand what you need your body to realize in this time. And we just thank you in Yeshua's name. And everybody says, amen.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good to have you. Good to be here. I appreciate it so much when the pastor gives me 5 hours to speak. You know I'm just joking. The good news and the bad news, it's an hour and a half. But I will try to take different parts of my 26 hours of teaching and share it tonight. The first thing I wanted to share, how many people who know me know the testimony about the Dallas Council on World Affairs? I see about 12 hands. Okay, so you definitely need to hear. This is an appropriate testimony to start the message with. It is a testimony which is in all six of my books. It's the only testimony in all six of my books. And even though I'm Jewish, this is a Christian testimony. And it is a testimony that applies to all Christians in America, Canada, Europe, Latin America, Asia, Africa, wherever. I know all of you have your eyes set on Israel. You're all watching to see, will there be quiet? Will Hamas start again with another barrage of missiles at our civilian population, hoping that the Israelis will counterattack and kill as many Palestinians as the Hamas wants Israel to kill? And you all know that Israel does not want to kill Palestinians. I appeared on Israeli TV, Channel 1, in October of 2006, and I said on TV, Israeli TV, that all the nations, all the Arab nations hate the Palestinians. That there's only one nation on the face of the earth that really loves the Palestinians, and that's the Jews of Israel. We live with the Palestinians. We eat and drink with them. We work with them. We fellowship with them. They do not like the PLO. They do not like Hamas. These Palestinians want to live in peace alongside us, the vast majority of them. And you probably know that 85% of them have Jewish DNA. How many people know that they have Jewish DNA? The Palestinians have Jewish DNA. They were forced to convert to Islam over the centuries. Some of them have even kept the phylacteries in the prayer shawls of their great-grandparents. We do not want to kill the Palestinians. We want to live in peace with them. And so you're all wondering about Prime Minister Netanyahu. And I want to tell you, my opinion of Netanyahu is he's the right man in the right place at the right time. And though I consider myself arch right wing in Israel, but I support Netanyahu and what he's doing. And I have fights very often with my fellow right wingers. And I say to them, you do not know what the Prime Minister of Israel has to contend with. And so I'm starting now with the Dallas Council on World Affairs. What I'm going to do in the next hour and a half is probably give you about 16 different testimonies from different parts of my message, but they all interconnect. Because the problem is not only Islam. And we're not doing the five deceptions of Islam tonight. That's my ABC message, and I'm already behaving with you guys like you're going for your second and third degrees here at college. So we're not doing the ABCs. I think, how many people heard of the harlot riding the dragon? Okay, so I say, yes, Islam is the dragon. Islam is the devil. I do have a three-year jail sentence in Switzerland for saying it. How many people know I have a three-year jail sentence in Switzerland for saying it? And then Islam is not a religion. Islam is a criminal psychosis bent on the depopulation of the human race, including the Muslims. And I have a very good joke for you as we go along. I have a lot of jokes for you as we go along. But there's also something known as the harlot. And I define the harlot as the one world government. How many people heard of the one world government? So the Dallas Council on World Affairs is going to deal with the harlot. I'm already going to the next stage. And by the end of the evening, God willing, I'm going to show you how Islam is going to be defeated very soon. It's not going to be defeated by the Jews and the Christians. It's going to be defeated by the one world government. The harlot is going to dismount from the serpent, from the dragon, and then behead the dragon. The Antichrist is not who you think I might be referring to. I won't mention his name. I mean, he is salesman of the month, but he's not the Antichrist. I believe the Antichrist will come out of that one world government system that defeats Islam. So this whole message now is going to go in the direction of the defeat of Islam very soon in our time. Okay, but first I want to start to define the harlot. I was born in 1949, made Aliyah in 1968, and I came to the United States for the first time as an Israeli Army spokesman, of course privately, but I was an Israeli Army spokesman, in November-December of 1990. November-December 1990 was Desert Shield. How many people remember Desert Shield? Okay, you all remember that? January, February, March of 91 was Desert Storm. And so I came here in November, December, and as an Israeli Army spokesman, I had been debriefed by our commanders in Israel as to exactly what was going to happen with Saddam Hussein in Kuwait. And these things happened exactly as I said. So when I came back a second time to the States in 1991, in April, everybody said, Avi's a prophet, Avi's a prophet. I said, I'm not a prophet, I just listen to my commanders. As a little sidebar, you know, I was predicting 9/11 years before it happened. And everyone said, this obviously is crazy. You know, the Muslims are great people. By the way, the Muslims are great people. But the 19 terrorists on 9/11 were Muslims. And after it happened, obviously a prophet. Obviously a prophet. I said, I'm not a prophet. I listen to my wife. My wife, Rachel, monitors the broadcast of the Arabs on radio, TV, computers, newspapers. And for years, the Muslims were saying, those twin trade towers have to come down. And we're going to take their planes and we're going to crash them into the World Trade Center. So I put it in my book in 1997. Am I a prophet? No. Listen to my wife. Okay. And a lot of what I'm going to share tonight is based on things that my wife picks up in Arabic, which are going to be very surprising for many of you. I'll start with two quotes, and then I'm going to get into the Dallas Council on World Affairs. 30 years ago, Rachel was listening to them in Arabic, and the Saudis were saying, even if it takes us 150 years, we are going to make America a Muslim country. And my wife said, these people are dreaming. How could you make the greatest Christian country on earth a Muslim country? Now, after 30 years, my wife listens to them, the same people, and they're saying, we thought it was going to take 150 years. We were wrong. It's only going to take 30 years to make America a Muslim country. America is now being made a Muslim country. We're going to discuss this as we go along. So one of the things I wanted to share is, how did we get to this situation? How do we get to a situation in which the gates, the floodgates are open, and the Muslims are coming into this country in the tens of millions? Okay. So April 1991, I come back to the States for my second visit as a lecturer, and I get a call from a PR woman, desperate call. She heard me in November of 90. She said, get on the next plane to Dallas. You're speaking tomorrow before the Dallas Council on World Affairs. I didn't know what that was. I thought it was an economic forum. And my Christian friends in Texas, I called them and said, what's this Dallas Council business? And they said to me, that's the one world government. And you better be careful, because if you get in their way, they're going to kill you. Because their God is mammon. Their God is money. And they won't let anything get in the way of their money. This is a very key part of my message tonight. And this is 23 years ago, and nothing has changed. It's only gotten worse. But it's the same reality of 23 years ago. God has a great sense of humor. I was told, you know, that I was a pinch hitter. I was being brought down 24-hour notice to Dallas. You know, these Dallas Council people, they prepare their meetings a year, 2 years in advance. So what does it mean, get on the next plane? I was replacing Boris Yeltsin. Boris Yeltsin had been contracted to give four lectures in Dallas. He gave two lectures, and the third lecture he didn't show because he had some alcohol to drink, and he was a severe alcoholic. And they put him straight on his plane back to a sanitarium in Russia. And the fourth night was paid for also. They needed a speaker. And this PR woman succeeded in convincing them to bring me. So, number one, God had to make Boris Yeltsin so drunk that the doors would open for Avi Lipkin to come down. And that's only half the story. The other half of the story, when I got there, General Latham, retired, says to me, so tell me, sir, what's it like to be a general in the Israeli army? I said, general? He said, aren't you General A. Lipkin, Chief of Staff of the Israeli Army? You see, he thought he was getting the Chief of Staff, Amnon Lipkin Shachak. I said, no, I'm Lieutenant A. Lipkin of the Army Spokesman's Office. But, you know, for people from Dallas, Amnon, Avi, it's all the same. So, you see, God has a sense of humor. And I said, I'm going to give you guys a lecture you're never going to forget. And the truth is, they liked it so much, they actually did invite me back. I did not go, though, because the Israeli government told me not to go because I was supposed to debate with Professor Edward Said of the Palestinian Liberation Organization. And the Israeli government said, you cannot talk to terrorists, while Rabin, Peres, and Beilin were in Oslo negotiating the Oslo agreements with the terrorists. Okay. By the way, are they still terrorists? Yes, they're still terrorists. It's okay. God's in control. So I got up, I delivered my message, as an Israeli army spokesman is trained to do. And I said to them, I thought they were Christians. I really didn't understand. It did not sink in that these were not Christians. They were dressed with tie and jacket. It was like Sunday best, you know. They looked like Americans. They talked like Americans. Texas, you think they're all Bible people. And they said to me, I said to them, you know, Israel is a very small country. And to show you how small Israel is, Jesus walked from Nazareth down to the Sea of Galilee. That's about a 3-4 hour hike. Actually, if you go to Israel today, there's something called the Jesus Trail. You know, you're up in Nazareth, you see the Sea of Galilee, it's a downhill all the way. It's a nice walk, it's a 3-4 hour walk. Has anyone done the Jesus Trail? Well, you have a challenge now, Pastor Mark. So the Israeli government promotes the Jesus Trail. You can walk from Nazareth down to the Sea of Galilee. What was the Sea of Galilee? The fishers. Then from there, Jesus walked down the Jordan River. You know, we didn't have buses or taxis in those days. You walked along the river. And he gets to Jericho. And he baptizes with John the Baptist, who, by the way, was not a Baptist. You know, I spent a lot of time in Texas. What's the difference between Southern Baptist and Northern Baptist? Does anyone know? Northern Baptists go to hell. Okay. I get a lot of mileage in Texas at that one, let me tell you. And after Jesus baptizes in Jericho, he has a 5-hour hike up to the temple in Jerusalem. And you see Jerusalem from Jericho. If you've been to Israel, you see it. How small the country is. My house is in Kedar, which is very close to Jerusalem. And we see Amman, the capital of Jordan, straight across the Jordan Valley. It's only about 30 miles. We see the lights of Jordan at night. We see Amman during the day. It's such a small territory. And if you're a terrorist coming across the Jordan, you can jog up to Jerusalem in 3 hours. If you're driving legal, it's 20 minutes to Jerusalem, whether it's a car or a tank or a half track. And if you're flying in an attack aircraft from Amman, it's 3 minutes to bomb Jerusalem and 3 minutes more to bomb Tel Aviv and 5 minutes to be back in Amman sipping Turkish coffee. That's how small Israel is. This was my message as an army spokesman. And then I got into a little politics, and I said to them, Israel was attacked again and again and again, and Israel took Sinai 3 times, and Israel took Golan twice. And the UN says in its resolutions 242 and 338 that Israel must hand over land for peace, which is what your media does tell you. What your media does not tell you is that the sentence continues. It says Israel will give land for peace, but Israel will negotiate with its neighbors, its Arab neighbors, for new borders which are secure, recognized, and defensible. So if we have to negotiate with our neighbors for new borders which are secure, recognized, and defensible, does that mean that we go back to the June 5th, 1967 borders? We don't go back. And the UN is no friend of Israel, but the UN recognized reality at that stage. And yet the U.S. administrations of the last 50 years, all they do is talk about June 5th, 1967. I believe it was Henry Kissinger who called those borders Auschwitz extermination camp borders. The U.S. Joint Chiefs of Staff visited Israel in 1968. They said under no circumstances should you give back Judea and Samaria or Gaza or the Golan. And yet the U.S. government, the State Department, and I want you to know, I'm not going to attack Democrats, I'm not going to attack Republicans, I'm going to attack everybody. Let me ask you a rhetorical question. Are we supposed to be respecters of men? I mean, we have a role model. Okay. That was my message. We had dinner. I was putting my jacket on to leave, and the august people of the Dallas Council on World Affairs said to me, where are you going? We're not finished with you yet. You worked in Prime Minister Shamir's office? I said, yes. Well, we want you to take a message back to Prime Minister Shamir. First thing we want you to know, Avi, you're a good speaker for Israel. You know why? Because you're an American-born Jew. You don't speak with a funny Israeli accent. We understand everything you're trying to say to us. You know how Israelis have a funny accent? They said, we in Dallas don't like funny accents. We don't like Jewish accents, Arab accents, Russian of Yeltsin accents, Queen's English from Oxford. And you speak like a Yankee from New York. But you speak clear English. So you're a good speaker for Israel. But you know what your problem is? You don't know realities. We're going to teach you realities tonight. The Dallas Council on World Affairs is going to teach you realities. Reality number one, Israel is all alone. Remember, this is April 1991. Who is president? George Herbert Walker Bush. This is not Democrat now. This is a Republican. And he says, they said to me, these are Jimmy Baker people. Remember James Baker III. And they said to me, Israel's all alone. America is tired of paying for Israel's wars. You Jews are going to make peace with the Arabs whether you like it or not. And you're not going to give them 91% of the land, which is Sinai, or 93%, which is Sinai and the Golan. You're going to give them the whole 9 yards. Because you're all alone. And we don't care about UN resolutions 242 and 338 calling for new borders. And the second thing they said to me, and if you don't leave tonight with any other message other than what I'm going to say in the next sentence, then you've already gotten something very important. So the second thing is, there's only one thing that made America great, and that's the barrel of oil. The steady price of oil, steady supply of oil, and we're not going to let the Jews get in the way of that. Is that clear? Now, I was in complete shell shock because I was new at this lecture circuit business. There were two Christian couples there. They were my guests that night. They had brought me to hear Marlon Maddox. How many people remember Marlon Maddox? Point of view. Well, that's a Dallas, you know, one among my many sins. I'm very much in love with Texas, and I'm always in Texas. And Marlon Maddox, a very famous personality in the South. He had a fundraiser in November of 1990, and Eric Gustafson was my host that night, so I invited him as my guest that night, and he was shaking like a tuning fork when they said what made America great was the barrel of oil. And he got up with my permission and looked at these people in the room and said, "You say what made America great was the barrel of oil? You should be ashamed of yourselves. What made America great was not the barrel of oil. What made America great was Jesus Christ." And you have to remember, I was the only Jew in the room. And I want you to know, I did not really like Jesus Christ very much that night. As soon as I heard that testimony, the lights went on, I fell in love with Jesus. I'm still a Jew, by the way. I'm not a Christian. But I learned a very important message that night. And I thought to myself, just think for a moment, if the President of the United States in World War II had been a Christian, would we have lost 6 million Jews in World War II? If you had had a conservative president, a Christian president, not a socialist Democrat, we might have saved 1 million, 2 million Jews. All the United States had to do, all Britain had to do, all Russia had to do was to send one bomber and bomb one trestle of the railroad track going to Auschwitz. The trestle would have taken a week, 2 weeks to fix. By 1944, it was clear the Nazis were losing. It would not have affected the course of the war. And the President of the United States and all the leaders knew exactly what was happening at the gas chambers. And so I want to say some pretty wild things now. I see another Holocaust coming to Israel, and it's not going to be only the Muslims threatening Israel. It's going to be the United States and the West too. Unless there is a Christian revolution in America, unless you have a Christian Washington and a Christian president and a Christian Congress, and bring America back to its senses from the great times of its creation, America has lost its Christianity. Okay. And so I don't want to talk in lofty terms. I want to say that I feel that the Christians have to have a revival in America for Israel to have a survival. I'm going to be a little rude now. How many people know who Stephen Harper is? I'm counting maybe 10 hands. The whole group, I'm watching, 10 hands. Stephen Harper is the Prime Minister of Canada. And he's a Christian. And he's Israel's best friend. God bless Canada. And so I took a vow in April of 1991 that I was going to work for a Christian revival in America. Yes, I'm a Jew. Yes, I have an ulterior motive. The ulterior motive is to save Israel from destruction at the hands of the enemies of God. And America has to be saved from the enemies of God. And I think it was Jesus who said, did you have to choose? Either you serve the Lord or you serve mammon. Mammon is a very Hebrew word. We say mammon. Mammon in Hebrew means money. These people of Dallas, they serve money. Money is their God. Washington, for the last 100 years, has ceased to be a Christian town. Washington, D.C. is now a money city. It is a power city, an oil city. Who has the money? Who has the oil? Who has the power? Islam. And so if you don't believe in God, if you don't serve the Lord, if you serve mammon, you're going to serve Islam. And if you're going to serve Islam, Israel will be sacrificed again, just as it was in World War II. Never again, God willing, but it's not just enough to say it. You know, we Jews, we're Israelites once. In Egypt, we were slaves. With the black people, the blacks are our brothers and sisters. And we know what slavery is. It's a horrible thing. And America had a great president by name of Abraham Lincoln who banished slavery with the Emancipation Declaration. They never heard of Abraham Lincoln in Africa. Slavery is still big time. Blacks are being slaughtered in Africa in the millions. I still haven't heard about the 300 girls who were kidnapped. Where is the world? Where is the outrage? In World War II, the Muslims came to the Nazis. Muslims supported the Nazis. And they said, if you kill the Jews, we're going to be with you. On the other hand, the Allies, they didn't want the Arabs to go with the Nazis, so they made a deal with the Muslims too. The Muslims said, if you deny the Jews visas to escape from Nazi Europe, we're with you. So there was a lethal combination. Hitler and the Nazis did the killing, but the British, the Canadians, and the Americans denied Jews visas. How many people remember the ship to St. Louis? That's another challenge. I see less than half the hands went up. The movie, the St. Louis, is extremely critical to understand. St. Louis was a passenger ship, a Nazi-German passenger ship. And it was carrying 900 Jews from in May of 1939 to Cuba, not to the U.S. And Breckinridge Long, who was the Undersecretary of State for Visas under Roosevelt, calls the Cuban government, says, cancel the visas, send the ship back. So the ship turned around, went back to Florida. The U.S. Coast Guard circled the ship. It stopped in three different places off the Florida coast, hoping that the Jews could disembark. And the Coast Guard made sure to it that nobody got off that ship. Then the ship went past the Canadian Maritime Provinces. Hundreds of pastors in Canada signed a petition to Mackenzie King, Prime Minister of Canada, let the kids off the ship, have mercy on the kids. And Mackenzie King said, one Jew is one Jew too many. The ship went back to Antwerp in Belgium. The war had already broken out by then, but the Germans had not yet invaded the Low Countries, in other words, Belgium, Holland. They were in the process of gobbling up Poland. Within a few months, they took Belgium, Holland, where all these Jews were, and 800 to 900 died in the Holocaust. And you know the story. You know that there were 7 million Jews behind Nazi lines, 6 million died. And I said to the people of the Dallas Council on World Affairs, are you saying to me Israel's going to be sacrificed for a barrel of oil? And they said, yes, now you got it. Take that message back to Shamir. Israel's going to be sacrificed. Now put yourself in my place. When you see Christians saying what made America great was Jesus Christ, meaning God, the Bible, Israel, and you see people who serve mammon who sacrificed Israel and are going to do it again, with whom are you going to cast your destiny? So my destiny is with the Christians. And I want you to know, it's not really the message tonight. I'm watching my clock. I don't even know what I'm going to say in the next hour. I'm going to say a lot of things. But one of the things, if I had 2 hours, I would just talk about the Bible Block Party. How many people know I'm forming a Judeo-Christian party to run for office in Israel? Actually, about 30 hands. I'm forming a Judeo-Christian, in Hebrew it's called the Old Testament Party, because Jews and Christians agree on the Old Testament. In English, we call it the Bible Block Party. The Christians of Israel are 8%. There's not one representative in the Knesset yet. And I'm hoping that in 2 years from now, when we have our next elections, I will lead this new party, which I'm forming in January, February, and half of my candidates will be Jews, and half of my candidates will be Christians, and it'll be Jew, Christian, Jew, Christian, Jew, Christian. Every 40,000 votes, the next person on the list gets in. And by the end of the evening, you're going to understand. You're going to understand that very soon there are going to be millions and millions of immigrants to Israel coming from the West. And a lot of them are Jews married to Christians, meaning the Christians are going to move with them. You know that the intermarriage rate in the United States is 71%. How many people know this? For every 100 Jews, 71 are going to marry Christian spouses. I don't know if you knew that or not. And when the Muslims come to kill the Jew, they have to kill the Christian spouse. And they have to kill the children of the intermarriage. And they're all going to go home to Israel. So my party will be the biggest party in the Israeli government. So You know, I know I really shouldn't tell jokes, but this joke, many times God uses humor to get the message across. So I'm going to tell you a quick joke. You know, how many people saw My Big Fat Greek Wedding? Okay, my favorite movie, I want you to know. And this Greek girl comes to her dad and says, "So, Daddy, can I marry the guy, this American guy?" And he thinks, "No, now go eat something." How many people remember that? Go eat something. Jews are like that too. We're very cliquey. We want our boys and girls to marry within the faith. So there's a joke. This Jewish guy has three sons. The first son comes home, "Daddy, I met the girl of my dreams. What's her name?" "O'Malley." That's not a Jewish name. "I don't care. I love her. She's the greatest woman in the world." "Okay, son, you have my blessing. Go in peace." "Please, God, I have two sons left. Let them marry girls with Jewish names." Second son comes home, "Daddy, I met the girl of my dreams. What's her name?" "Smith." That's not a Jewish name. "Sorry, I love her. She's..." "Okay, I heard that from your brother. Go in peace. You have my blessing." "Please, God, I have one son left. Let him marry a girl with a Jewish name." Third son comes home, "Daddy, I met the girl of my dreams. What's her name?" "Goldberg." "Goldberg, praise God, a Jewish name. What's her first name?" "Whoopi." You have today in the United States about 6 million Jews. 71% intermarriage means about 4 million Christians. In other words, when the Muslims in America start massacring Jews, they're going to start massacring Christians. So I'm expecting 10 million immigrants to Israel. And by the law of return, these people who are married to Jews or related to Jews, if you have one Jewish grandparent, if you can prove it, you can move to Israel. Okay. You understand why this party is so critical for Israel's future? Hosea 11, verse 10. I'm paraphrasing now. "My children Ephraim will come home trembling from the west as the Lord roars like a lion." What's the west? United States, Canada, Mexico, Brazil, Argentina, wherever there's a Jewish community. You know, praise God, I spent 10 wonderful days in Canada, and I came back last night across the border. And I have my second most important testimony. The first most important testimony is Dallas Council on World Affairs, which defines the harlot. The harlot riding the dragon, servicing the dragon, Islam. And I was in Edmonton. This happened in the summer of 1999. It's in my books. And I'm driving from California on I-5. You all heard of I-5. And I went up to Oregon and Washington State. And, you know, I always say I suffer for Christ in Florida in the winter. And I suffer for Christ in Vancouver and Seattle in the summer, which is what I'm doing now. So I crossed the border into Canada in the summer of 99. And I go up to a little area called Maple Ridge, which is about an hour to the east of Vancouver. A little farmhouse, 50 people there. And I do a 10-hour teaching, 3 nights, 3.5 hours a night. And so you're very lucky it's only an hour and a half tonight. And then I drive 2 days. Wednesday, Thursday, I drive up to Edmonton in the province of Alberta, halfway up to Alaska. And I preach in a Northern Baptist church. They're nice too. And but they didn't laugh when I told them the joke. So. And then Friday, it was the eve of the Sabbath, and my Christian hostess, Cora Brisbois, calls up the local Orthodox rabbi and says, "We have this Israeli army spokesman, Avi Lipkin. Can you take him for the Sabbath?" And he says, "Sure, send him over." So I go over to the rabbi. The first thing he says to me, "What's a nice Jewish boy like you doing in the Christian churches?" And I said to him, "Listen, Rabbi, we're 5 million war heroes in Israel, but the Muslims are 1.5 billion. If we had 100 million born-agains on our side, that may change the playing field here in our favor." And he says, "Son, you know, that's a very good idea. I never thought of that. And it's very good that you go to the churches. I would never stop in a church, but if you go to the churches, that's good. God bless you." The next morning after the service, the rabbi calls me up and says, "The Christians give Avi 10 hours to speak. We're going to give him 10 minutes to speak." And as soon as I got up to speak, I got shouted down by two liberals. You know, liberals with a capital L. And they wouldn't let me speak. They said, you know, we're not going to let you speak against the Muslims. And I couldn't speak. Every time I tried to get up to speak, they shouted me down. See, liberals are liberal with you if you're liberal like they are. But if you are not liberal like they are, they're not going to be very liberal with you because liberals are communist totalitarians. So, you know the true liberals are Bible-believing Christians and Orthodox Jews. People who believe in the Bible, they don't have this inferiority complex. They're ready to listen because they know God's in control. Amen. Thank you. Thank you. So who comes to my rescue? We have only 10 minutes. A Christian messianic woman who is going to the Jewish Orthodox synagogue every Shabbat. You know why? Because Jesus went to synagogue on Shabbat. He didn't go to church on Sunday. And, you know, if you go to a Jewish synagogue, you know, on Shabbat, we read from the law, we read from the prophets, and then we have a sermon. That's Jesus, what Jesus did. You know, nothing has changed in 2,000 years. You know the joke about how 100 rabbis change a light bulb? 100 reformed rabbis asked, does the light bulb want to change? 100 conservative rabbis asked, you know, say, we want to establish a committee. And how do 100 Orthodox rabbis change a light bulb? Change? So nothing has changed in 2,000 years. So anyway, so she gets up. She gets up and she says, listen, if you're not going to let Avi speak, I have a testimony for you. I am a social worker for the government of Canada, province of Alberta, city of Edmonton. And I am a caseworker for an Egyptian Muslim woman doctor from Cairo. Now, you all remember Mother Teresa. Mother Teresa was a saint. 99 years of her life in the Catholic Church were devoted to these poor people of India, and she was feeding the poor, healing the sick. And when she died in her home, which is the Catholic Church. Her bed was the Catholic Church. Her family was the Catholic Church. She had all the backing of the church. This Muslim woman in Cairo was in her 40s, unmarried, and she was doing everything completely as a volunteer in one of the poorest neighborhoods of Cairo. So she was in her 40s, unmarried, and she said, you know what, midlife crisis, and she applied for a visa to emigrate to Canada. And the Canadians snapped her up immediately, said, sure. You know, so this was a very famous woman in Egypt, and they gave her a visa. The next day, there's a knock on her door. It was three jihadis. Now, you all know what jihadis are. They're the tall guys with the turbans and the flowing robes and the Quran and the beard. And she knew them from the mosque. They knew her. And they said to her, in Arabic, Mabruk, which means congratulations. And she answered them, Allah barak fik, Allah should also give you congratulations. Why do I have congratulations? They said, because we know you're going to Canada. Well, how did you know? That was just approved yesterday. Oh, we know everything about you. And we have our fanatic Muslims everywhere in the Egyptian government. This is 1999. And secondly, yes, we have congratulations in store for us because you're going to work for us. She says, what does that mean? Oh, yeah, you're going to be our spy in Canada. Well, what does that mean? Well, you're going to have a clinic. And when people come to your clinic, Jew, Christian, Muslim, they're going to sign up with their name, address, telephone number, their place of employment, address, telephone number. And you're going to put this all on a hard disk and you're going to give it to us. And when we get orders for jihad or holy war, we will know where the Jews are to kill them. And if the Jews are married to Christians, we're going to kill the Christian spouses. And if the Jews and the Christians have children, we're going to kill them too. And we're going to kill the Messianics. We're going to kill the pastors that love Israel and their churches. And by the way, there are not too many churches that love Israel, in case you didn't know. So the Muslims are very, very active on the computer to map out who are the Jews, who are the Christians who smell of the Jews, who are with the Jews, the Messianics and the pastors that love Israel, Zionist pastors. And they're all targeted for destruction. So anyway, so this doctor said to them, listen guys, you know, I'm a devout Muslim. I go to the mosque every day to pray. I give zakat. Zakat is charity. And I don't think there's a woman more devout than I am, but I'm also a doctor. I swore the Hippocratic Oath to heal people and save lives. I'm not into politics. I don't understand politics. And I'm not into killing people, even the Jews. So the jihadi said to her, oh, okay, so you don't want to work with us. She says, no, I don't want to work with you. So standing next to this doctor, woman doctor, was another woman, her best friend from childhood, helping her in the clinic. And the jihadis grabbed this woman, friend of the doctor, pulled out a knife, and they slit her throat. Well, what are you going, oh, you know what ISIS is doing. That's the way they operate. They slit people's throats. They behead people. And they pointed their finger at the doctor, and they said, if you don't work for us in Canada, this is what's going to happen to you. So the next day, she had political asylum in the Canadian embassy, and the Royal Canadian Air Force flew in a private jet to pick her up in Cairo and bring her to Edmonton. And this Christian messianic woman in the Orthodox Jewish synagogue is the caseworker. You tell me that God did not have a divine appointment for me in Edmonton that night. And then she went on to say, I work with the RCMP. And the RCMP says very clearly that 90% of the Muslims are peacekeeping, law-abiding citizens. Only, in quotes, only 10% of terrorists following the agenda of the Middle East. I'm going to show you in a few minutes that 30 million Muslims live in America today. It's one of the biggest secrets that the American people are being denied knowledge of. And nobody in Washington is accountable. The floodgates are open and the flood is coming in. Okay. You got 6 million Jews, 4 million Christians married to Jews, children, 10 million. How many of the 10 million can be killed in one day by 3 million, 10% of the 30 million, when they get the orders for jihad? And I want you to know something. I thank you and I praise God for all of you because the Jews will not listen to me. Jews don't want to hear this. Because Jews don't want to leave America. But God's word is that He's going to bring the Jews home. And I have news for you. You all here, as they say in Texas, you're all Jews. By the way, I have to issue a warning. Every time you guys applaud or disrupt me, it's going to be another 5 minutes on the message. So what I want to do now is I want to start talking about Russia-Ukraine. And I want you to know that I have done an hour and 40 minutes of teaching on YouTube when you go home. I'm going to do it about 15 minutes tonight because Russia-Ukraine is part of the overall picture of what I'm talking about tonight. And many Ukrainians and many Russians have seen my teaching, and both sides applaud my teaching because I don't take a side. I just explain the history. And both sides are right. Ukraine is right. Russia is right. Okay. But you have to understand the reality of what's going on with Russia-Ukraine to understand the bigger picture. So when you go home, you have an hour and 40 minutes. The downloads are all free. And be blessed and get the information. And I want you to know, I kind of fell into this Islamic threat scenario because of my wife, Rachel, because she's from Egypt, and she's an intelligence gatherer, and she gives me all this information all the time. And I was an army spokesman. I was in Prime Minister Shamir's office. But my BA in college was Sovietology, Russian studies, East European studies. And I want to give you a few minutes of history because, you know, most Americans are not even learning anymore about 1620 and Plymouth Rock. Most Americans are not learning anymore about George Washington and the American Revolution or Abraham Lincoln and the Civil War. Most Americans now draw a complete blank. And young Americans today, the whole day, they're on their little phones, you know. But nobody's reading and nobody's following the history that we had to do in the 50s, 60s, and 70s. I'm not talking about history from 1620. I'm talking about history from 995 AD. The Russian Orthodox Church was established by Cyril and Methodius, Saint Cyril and Saint Methodius in 995 AD. Because the Muslims, the Turks, and others were coming up from Turkey and raping and burning and vandalizing, as we see in Iraq today. Carrying off women into harems, slavery. Moscow, Warsaw, Poland, Kiev. It was a horrible time. It was a time of great destruction, great suffering. And the church came to Russia to mobilize the Slavic tribes to defend themselves from Turkey, from Islam. How many people remember the year 1053 AD? That was the split between the Catholics in Rome and the Eastern Roman Empire in Byzantium. You know, you guys talk about Protestants and Catholics, and I have about 2 hours of jokes about Protestants and Catholics. Ukraine is Catholic. Russia is Orthodox. So number one, you've got a religious war that has not stopped for 1,000 years. Okay. And I'm going to share a few crazy things tonight. You see my blue eyes? You know, my brother had cancer. He still has cancer. And so he did a DNA test. And they asked my brother, where did you get Norwegian genes from? I got Norwegian genes. Those blue eyes are not Palestinian. And I pieced together pieces of the history of my mother's family from Poland. And I really believe that the King of Poland gave his daughter to my forebear, who was brought over from Germany. We were knighted by the King of Poland, and we built the walls of Warsaw. So we were given the name Kamien. Kamien in Polish and Russian and Ukrainian means stone. My family were stonemasons, and we built the walls of Warsaw. Why did the King of Poland build the walls of Warsaw? Because the Turks were coming in from the south and threatening Poland. The Turks were at the gates of Europe. The Turks were at the gates of Vienna. How many people remember 1683? The King of Poland comes down with some German barons and their armies, and they defeat the Turks, and this begins the pushback of the Turks across the Dardanelles. How many people remember the Battle of Lepanto, 1571? I mean, these are important things you need to know. Okay, I have another piece of history you all know. How many people remember the Battle of the Spanish Armada? I don't see enough hands. That's 1588, the British and the Dutch were Protestants, defeat the Catholic Spanish fleet. That's why you know about it, because the Protestants won. But 17 years before, 1571, the Catholic Spanish fleet defeats the Turkish Muslim fleet at Lepanto. This was the beginning of the end of the Ottoman Empire. So I'm talking about all these battles that are taking place in Europe that Americans never learned. You don't learn American history. Why should you learn European history? It's tragic. History is history. You don't take sides. This is what this side did. This is what that side did. You know, we report, you decide. Okay. Now, the King of Poland actually created an empire. Poland in the 1600s extended from the Baltic Sea in the north all the way down to the Black Sea. Ukraine was under the rule of the King of Poland. And they chafed. Ukrainians didn't like the Poles. Poles are also Catholics. They're also Slavic people, but they're a different group. And the Poles dominated Russia. And the Russians didn't like the Poles either. 1648, leader of the Ukrainians, the George Washington of the Ukrainians, his name is Khmelnytsky. And Khmelnytsky leads a revolt, massacres the Catholic priests of Poland, the Polish nobility, and the Jews, because the Jews were the tax collectors and the administrators of the Polish Empire. According to the information I have, maybe I'm wrong, 500,000 Jews were killed in 1648 by the Ukrainians. 500,000 Jews. Khmelnytsky, the George Washington of the Ukrainians, was a mass murderer equal to the barbarity of Hitler in the Jewish eyes. Because 500,000 Jews was 1/3 of the Jewish people at the time. How many people remember Fiddler on the Roof? Remember when Tevye points his finger up at God and says, why do you choose us all the time? Can't you choose somebody else? Why are we the chosen people? Because being the chosen people means everybody hates you and everything. By the way, Christians also. Why are Christians hated? Because Christians are chosen people too. Okay. And anyone who hates the Jews is going to hate the Christians, and anyone who hates the Christians is going to hate the Jews. How many people know that Homeland Security today says that if you're a Christian, you're a terrorist? Am I making this up? How many people know that Homeland Security describes Bible believers, Jews or Christians, as mentally unstable? I'm going to get to that a little later, about 3 hours from now. So in the 1800s, of course, after Napoleon brings down the gates of the ghettos and lets the Jews out and says Jews should be able to be in any job they want and be part of the society. But the anti-Semitism never stopped. And the pogroms were terrible, the massacres of the Jews. And so a whole bunch of Jews said, you know what, something's wrong here. All of this hatred comes from God. Now, you know, in the book of Ephesians, it talks about the one new man in Christ. How many people know the book of Ephesians, one new man in Christ? Okay, so these Jews said, all we need to do is get rid of God. If we get rid of God, there'll be no more hatred. Because all the hatred comes from God. How many people have heard people in your families that are not saved who say that all the hatred and killing comes from religion? And your government says it too. Get rid of religion, there'll be no more hatred, there'll be no more killing. So the Marxist, socialist, communist movements were created in order to abolish God and thereby stop the hatred. That's what these Jews really believed. Get rid of God, there'll be no more anti-Semitism. And so you know that after World War I, or during World War I, there was a breakup of the Tsarist Russia, and you had the Reds fighting the Whites. Reds were the communists. And you did not really find too many Jews in the White armies. You found the Jews in the Red armies, communist armies. And actually, my grandfather in Poland, my grandfather of blessed memory, fought in Pilsudski's army in Poland against Trotsky and the communists. Then he went to Argentina, of course. That's why I preach in Spanish, because I speak Spanish as my mother tongue. We don't want to get into that now. The Ukrainians led a very tough revolt against Russia, and they were defeated by the communists. Now, Stalin comes to power, gets rid of the Jews, but in the late 1917, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, until Trotsky was killed, there were a lot of Jewish communists, and they defeated the Ukrainians. And then Stalin comes in with something called collectivization. The Ukrainians had small farms. The Ukrainians were very successful farmers. Ukraine was the breadbasket of Europe until the collectivization. And so when the communists came in, many Jews were leaders in these communist armies. And the Jews had never forgotten what Khmelnytsky did to us in 1648. 20, 30, 40 million Ukrainians and Russians died from the Great Famine. How many people have heard of the Great Famine in Russia? Stalin's favorite motto was, you will starve, but you will export. People starved. Tens of millions of people. Stalin was considered just as bad as Hitler in the eyes of the Ukrainians and in many Russians. World War II, Hitler comes into the Ukraine, and the Ukrainians welcome Hitler as a liberator. For them, he was a liberator. Many Ukrainians joined the German army. There was also another group that joined the German army, the Tatars. How many people heard of the Tatars? Tatars are Turks. Crimea, you've heard of Crimea. Crimea was Tatar. So when Stalin comes back with the victory of the Red Army, the Ukrainians are punished. The Tatars are expelled to a new land. They have like an Indian reservation called Tatarstan. You know, here in America, they make casinos, and now these Native Americans are making a lot of money. In Russia, they found oil. The Muslim Tatars found oil. And they became very rich. But a lot of Tatars said, we're going back to Crimea as soon as we can, because that was the Jerusalem of the Tatars, Crimea. And today, there are two groups in the Ukraine who hate the Russians, the Ukrainians and the Tatars. We're talking about hundreds of years of war and hatred between Russians and other groups. How many people remember the Olympic Games in Sochi just a few months ago? How many people heard of the Circassians? Circassians? I see one hand, two hands, three hands. If you've been to Israel, you may know who your Circassians are. Circassians are Turks. Now, Sochi was a Circassian town. It wasn't Russian. In 1854, the Tsarist army conquered this Circassian land and massacred 3 million Circassians. There is a hill in Sochi called Red Hill, not because of the Red Communist Party, but because of the blood that was spilled of the Circassians. It was the Holocaust. The Russian army killed 3 million Circassians. Many others fled back to Turkey. And the Turks resettled them in Israel. And the Circassian Turks are Muslims. They serve in the Israeli army. See, Israel is such an apartheid country. We have Muslim Bedouin. We have Muslim Circassians. We have other Muslims. We have Christians in our army. We have Druze in our army. Muslims serve in all facets of Israeli life. And yet there are, I want to say a bad word in the house of God, there are people who actually come and say Israel is an apartheid country. You know who's apartheid? The Arabs. Because Jews cannot live in any Muslim land. They'll be beheaded. Christians cannot live in any Muslim land. They're going to be beheaded. Blacks cannot live in Islamic lands. They're going to be beheaded, raped, and kidnapped, and enslaved. But that's okay because the Muslims, they can do it. You know why? Because they have the money, they have the oil. And nobody's going to protest because you're going to be doing business with these people. You do business with these people, you're selling your soul to the devil. You're going to enjoy it at first. And then comes payday. When you serve Islam, later comes payday. Okay. So we've spoken about Dallas. We've spoken about Edmonton. We've spoken about Russia. One last point I wanted to make. 1953, Stalin dies. Does anyone know on what Jewish holiday Stalin died? Purim. Stalin had a plan in his last days of senility to kill every last Jew in the Soviet Union. And he died like Haman the Evil. In 1994, a year later, who takes over Russia? Nikita Khrushchev. How many people know Nikita Khrushchev is Ukrainian? Nikita Khrushchev is Ukrainian. He wasn't a Russian. And because he was now the leader of Russia, Soviet Union, he decided to try to placate the Ukrainians for all the trouble and all the suffering the Ukrainians went through under communism. And if you know the maps, if you go home and look up 1953, Ukraine, the map, it's half the size of what it is today. And so Khrushchev said, we're going to double the size of the Ukraine. We're going to give you Russian land. We're going to give you Russian industries. We're going to give you Russian population. You've heard of Donetsk. You've heard of Dnepropetrovsk. You've heard of Lugansk. This is not Ukraine, it's Russia. But it was given by Khrushchev, the Ukrainian, over to the Ukrainians. I don't know how many of you know the history of Yugoslavia. Are there any people here from Yugoslavia? One hand, two hands. Any? There was an area of what is today Croatia. It was called Krajina. Krajina was settled by Serbs. And this was part of Greater Serbia. Tito was a Croat. And Tito, to placate the Croats, gave Serbian land to the Croats. Now, as long as this remains part of one big Yugoslav federation, it doesn't matter. But when the federation broke up into Serbia, Bosnia, Croatia, Slovenia, so the Serbs said, give us back our land. That area was settled by Serbs for centuries. And Bill Clinton bombed the heck out of the Serbs to force them to leave this land in the hands of the Croats, and the Serbs were ethnically cleansed from that area. And the Serbs were ethnically cleansed from the Muslim areas in Bosnia and in Kosovo. By the way, there's another country, I don't know if you've ever heard of it, Macedonia. Macedonia is 40% Albanian. Very soon it'll be a Muslim republic too. And the mosques are going up, built at the courtesy of the Saudis. The whole Balkans is going to be retaken by Turkey. So you see, we're getting now to Turkey. There's a reason I'm sharing all of this. All of this fits the picture.